Hey, Richie McCormack here from OTB's Rugby Daily. We'll keep you up to date throughout this year's Six Nations. So subscribe to Off The Ball Rugby and you can listen to Rugby Daily for free wherever you get your podcasts.
The Six Nations. Join in the obsession.
Off The Ball Daily.
You're welcome back. International Women's Day this Friday. Off The Ball have been celebrating the best of Irish women's sport. So yesterday on OTBAM, Off The Ball Breakfast, it was very much soccer. Emma Byrne was the winner. Today it was Gaelic Games, camogie and football. So Tommy Welch and Aisling O'Reilly were tasked with trying to pick their winners. And when it came to football, there were no doubts of the choice. Have a listen.
If you didn't even look at her stats, just growing up watching the game, you know, like she was just amazing. And you'd be always hearing them stories, just like Aisling said, of scoring 7 goals, 9 goals. Just these special players can do things like that. And to go on and win FAI Cup, Women's FAI Cups, Connacht Rugby Leagues, go on and do what she done in the AFL over in Australia. It's only special people can do that. But even with that, her single-minded focus seemed off the charts, like as in, you know, Roy Keane type of stuff, Jackie Tyrrell kind of stuff, where just once they got something into their head, they were going to get it no matter what. And Cora Staunton, looking in from the outside, seemed like that kind of player who could then go on and inspire everybody else all around her.
Yeah, to say the very least. And the numbers are just a bit mad. So 4 All-Irelands with Mayo, 3 National League titles, 11 All-Stars, debut at the age of 13 for Mayo. All-Ireland winner with their club as well, Carnacon, on 6 occasions. National titles won in soccer as well. And then, of course, the switch of sports. 5 years in Australia, which started out when she was 36, by the way. And she arrived home 5 years later. The highest score in Greater Western Sydney Giants history. Second highest score in the league at large. And that doesn't even touch on all of the numbers. Hence, Cora Staunton, you're very welcome to the show. You got the nod. You got the Tommy Welch seal of approval there anyway.
That's all that matters, Joe. Once Tommy gives me the seal of approval, not nice words to hear from Tommy. Compare me to Roy Keane, I think that's even probably better. He was probably my idol growing up and one person that I still to this day look up to the way he goes about it. So yeah, probably nice to be compared to someone like him.
Well, on that theme then, you said in your autobiography a couple of years ago, I remember, I was born stubborn.
Yeah, I probably still am stubborn. I actually was listening. I think it was maybe it was Sarah Lavin or an interview during the week. And they said it's not stubborn. It's been very determined. So, yeah, I think growing up, I had no choice. And as I said, I'm from a big family, a family of 8. And I'm stuck in the middle of all boys. So, yeah, I had to fight my own corner for most of my youth growing up. So I think that probably gave me the determination. And yeah, I suppose then, when I took my Mayo career as a 13-year-old into the senior team, you probably needed them traits. And yeah, I probably brought them through my career, whether it was Gaelic football, soccer, rugby, and lastly, AFL. I probably needed all them because there was probably lots of challenges along the way.
Yeah. Do I make it right that when you made your debut for Mayo at the age of 13, you scored about 2-5 in that debut?
Yeah, I never forget it. It was 2-5. It was in a National League game. Back in them days, we used to play 2 rounds of the National League before Christmas. So I think it was around October, November time. Yeah. So my first National League game for Mayo scored 2-5. And I always remember the year after, in 96, a week of madness where I played in an under-16 All-Ireland final, captain. We lost by a point. The following day, less than 24 hours later, I played in an All-Ireland senior semi-final, lost after extra time, scored 1-10 and missed a penalty. And then the following week, lost a minor All-Ireland final as well. So, and that was all at the age of kind of 14. So, yeah, that's where the madness probably started and continued for probably the next 25 or so years. Mm.
The Mayo career, those early years, though, huge success. Like around the time Finbar Egan steps down in 04, we have 4 All-Irelands in the back pocket, 2 National Leagues. And you said of him, pretty much the best coach that you worked under, helped me see the intricacies of the game, was an interesting line you had about Finbar Egan.
Yeah, definitely. 2 coaches, Finbar Egan and certainly my coach in Australia, were 2 coaches that I've learned a huge amount from. And are probably bringing into my own coaching career now. I think it was a guy that, because I was in college in Athlone, he lived in Athlone, so we probably spend a lot of time together. And yeah, he just probably, why I always had a passion for a game, I had a passion then to know how the game was going and how we should set up. And yeah, I just got really into that element of it. And then he threw myself and one of my good friends, Yvonne Byrne, into coaching a minor team, a Mayo minor team, when we were about 19 or 20, the ladies team, and we got to an All-Ireland final. And from there, I kind of fell in love with that side of the game and wanting not just to know what I was doing on the pitch, wanting to know what was happening around me and why were we doing this. So, yeah, I was a person that always asked a lot of questions and needed answers for sure.
You're somewhat unusual in that respect, in that I often associate the really gifted forward player with a certain selfishness and almost not a huge interest in how a team is set up or the tactical side of things, just to focus on their own game and their own skills. And also that kind of stubborn crankiness, I don't associate with that kind of a forward either. Like, you're a United fan, I'm sensing. So like, I don't think Berbatov was that stressed about a lot of things. Like it's more the Roy Keane persona somewhere in the heart of it, where I think those attributes are more to the fore. So I do think you're somewhat unusual in that way. Like the forward isn't often the cranky, how are we setting things up type.
Yeah, I don't know where I came from. I think I had it from a very young age. I think it probably came from club. I always remember, you know, as a 10, 11-year-old being in Mosny for the community games, and we lost an All-Ireland final by a point as an 11-year-old. And I always remember wondering, why did the coach make these decisions? If we'd done this, we'd have won the game. If we made this substitution, we'd have won the game. And that was at 11. So, yeah, I'd always that kind of thing. I was a type of player that even Mayo, Cairnacombe, whatever it was, I always needed to know what everyone else was doing and, you know, everyone else's role. And that's when I really struggled in Australia. I hadn't time to learn what everyone else was doing. Early days, I actually just had to concentrate on myself, and I just didn't understand the game well enough. But probably over the years, then I got to know the intricacies of AFL. So, yeah, it was probably the way I always was. And I suppose that's why, you know, now, you know, I love, you know, coaching or even, you know, commentating on the game, because I love to, dive deep into, you know, how the game is, you know, won and lost.
The second half of the Mayo career, say post 04, when things weren't going as well, like a number of controversies along the way, like 2010 pulled out of the championship. I remember that was kind of a big thing at the time. And then the ending was very messy as well under Peter Leahy. I saw you make the point in an interview with Keith Duggan a couple of years ago that there would have been a perception that we were a difficult group. And I guess as well, because you were seen as a leader and, you know, that crankiness, that adherence to standards, probably a perception that geez, Cora Staunton is difficult. Were you aware of that during those years? I can't think you liked that perception.
No, yeah, of course you're aware of it. Like, no matter, you know, especially as the years went on, maybe not early days because, you know, social media wasn't a big thing. But as I got older and the years go on, you can't be anything but aware of it because it's in your face. You look at your phone or whatever you might. 100%, I was difficult to deal with because I think we had that early days of Finbar Egan, you know, when I was 16 to kind of that 21, where we'd such a professional setup, probably way ahead of where every other ladies team was at the time. And after that, when he went, you know, the next kind of number of years in particular, where we had lots of changes in management, and that professional element wasn't there. And we were going back to standards from, you know, that we felt from when I probably went in as a 13-year-old. So I suppose once you have a sense of that kind of professional element and how you win, you just want to maintain that. And I suppose I always had that with my club as well. You know, we were very successful right throughout my career, whether it was underage or, you know, from a senior point of view. And we always had that kind of professional standard where we hold everyone to account. And it didn't matter if you were the oldest girl on the team or the youngest girl on the team. So, yeah, probably struggled with that a little bit. But I suppose it always was, you know, for the best of whether it was for Mayo or Cairnacone wanting us to succeed. And at times you probably felt people in the background, you know, weren't rowing the same way as the players were.
Because you'd be entitled to assume things will be progressive if we're here in 01, 02, 03, 04, we'll just automatically be better over the next decade. Things will improve. For them to go backwards whilst you were in the prime of your career, I mean, when you used the phrase there, I probably struggled a bit with it. I'd say you were pulling your hair out and banging the steering wheel on the way home at times.
Yeah, of course. And the problem is what happened in that period of time, and a lot of people don't see, is a lot of girls just pulled away. Because, you know, that was probably the easiest thing to do. But again, probably me being stubborn, if you want, or really determined, you know, I didn't feel like going to America on a J1 for a summer, or, you know, whatever it might be, going traveling. You know, when I come back, it was still going to be in the same way if we didn't try and fix it. So, yeah, do I look back at now and say, was I better off to take a year or two out? You know, I don't have any regrets around it. All we were doing was trying to make, you know, things better. And it did. It became better after it. You know, we had got to an All-Ireland final and in 2007, and things progressed on. And I suppose then after we left in, you know, 2017, you know, Mayo football is in a healthy state and that's all you want to do. Yeah, of course, you know, you want to leave, you know, retire from any sport, whether it's Gaelic football or AFL, on your own terms. But unfortunately, that's not the way it is. There's very few sports people that get to retire on a high. It's you know, normally injury or loss of form or whatever it might be that you have to retire. But, yeah. You know, I had 24 years with Mayo seniors. I look back on very fondly. You know, I'm at the stage now where we're having reunions and, you know, I'm meeting girls that I mightn't have played with or seen for 17 or 18 years, but we still have a huge connection, which is a brilliant thing about the GAA, that, you know, no matter if you don't see them for 5, 6, 10, 11, 12 years, you'll always have that connection of being All-Ireland winners or, you know, being through a lot with them.
Well, you span the generations. So if we take, when you join in 13, I'm thinking of the oldest player on the team in 95. And I'm thinking of the youngest player on the team when you headed off in 17. Big old gap between those two.
Yeah, there is. But it's amazing, Joe. I think when you're on the sports field or even you're training, it doesn't really matter. You don't at the time feel age is against you, whether you're younger or older. Like, you know, a lot of my friends that I have met through sports, yeah, while some of them are around my age now, I have girls that are still, you know, 15 years younger than me than I'm best friends with. So, and that's even with club now. You know, I'm trying to tip away playing a little bit of club still. And, you know, right. There's girls coming into the senior team at 14 and 15. So you're just kind of like,
right.
But, you know, that's what you want. You want to leave a good legacy at the end of the day. And I want to kind of country to be in a good spot when I leave. And, you know, like I did with the Giants or like I did with Mayo, I suppose that's, you know, what you're ultimately trying to do.
This is a slightly unfair question to ask anybody, but if you can, and everybody listening will know I'm asking you the question, so you're not just blowing your own trumpet, but like I have an idea of what made you special player from watching it down the years, but I'd love if you could take us into your head and your sense of what you were doing on the pitch. What do you think set you apart on the pitch?
I think overall I was probably a very consistent trainer, and I think that consistency in training, you know, I was one I could write throughout my career. You know, I could say I, like, and you're talking thousands of training sessions, I probably missed a handful, whether that was in any of the sports. You know, I probably had two serious injuries where I broke my leg and done my ACL. You know, but I'm back from an ACL in 5 months, you know, back from a broken leg probably in 7 months. You know, I didn't really ever miss many games or training sessions. I just think consistency. I trained all the time. You know, it was every day. And I just always tried to make myself better. So I think that was probably the one thing. And then I think I was just lucky. I put a lot down to I played with the boys probably from the age of 7 up to the age of 13-ish. And I just think that's where my skills became very good. And I think, you know, at times, you know, I'm not the most athletic player. I never was. You know, I was lucky, I was blessed with speed. But my skills always stood me out from everyone else. You know, and that was skills done at speed, whether it was, you know, taking a shot or dummying a player, whatever it might be. So I concentrated a huge amount on skill. You know, nowadays it's all about the physical aspect and being able to, you know, do a 2K in a certain trial or whatever. That wasn't it for me. It was always that I was out in the pitch, whether it was shooting, you know, kick pass and left, right foot. That's all I ever concentrated on. And I was doing that 7 days a week because I just loved it. I really enjoyed it. So I think they're probably the two things. I was just a consistent trainer, which ended up being a consistent performer. And then I just loved getting better. Like I loved scoring a point with the outside of my boot from 35 yards. I loved trying them things. So I think that was probably it.
It's a fascinating answer. 5 years in Australia. This really shouldn't have happened. This is nuts, really. I mean, I don't know. Am I more impressed by the 13-year-old debut or the 36-year-old debut? I'm impressed by both. So you go out a few days before your 36th birthday. You land in Sydney, Greater Western Sydney Giants. And I remember thinking at the time, God, she'll do well. Will she get 2 years? And you do five. And you don't miss a game. And you break your leg in four places in the middle of that period. Like, you break your leg in four places. What age are you then?
I was 37.
Right, so you're done then. Like, it's over then. Give it up then. You know what I mean? Like, it's outrageous.
Yeah, I suppose. Like, I only thought I was going to Australia for a year. When I decided to go and make the decision, I was in the height of club championship. We had just been into a Connacht final and I had said yes, but I was more worried about what club was happening in the club. And I kind of wasn't thinking about Australia. I arrived in Australia and I probably only started to think about when I was on the flight. But yeah, just hard work and challenging myself all the time. Again, I just trained all the time, never missed a training out there. And while they wanted to pull you out of training because you were that bit older, they knew in the end just to let me do what I was. And I was at the club 24/7 trying to make myself better. And I suppose, yeah, the injury was a little bit of a setback, but at the same time, it was probably a setback, but it was a blessing in other ways. You know, I had to reteach myself how to walk and run, and I ended up being a better runner because of it, because you know, my whole gait was changed. And yeah, I just kept challenging myself and wanted to be good. Like anything else, any sport you take up, you want to be good at. And yeah, my time out there, yeah, I really enjoyed it. And you know, people look at me when I say, you know, I was fitter and stronger than I ever was, you know, 38 39 40, because of being a professional athlete and the training I was doing. So, yeah, I was lucky. I had six seasons played out there over the 5 years, and I was lucky, yeah, I didn't miss a game. Now, I was lucky I didn't miss a game because I did break a few bones along the way, a couple of surgeries and stuff, but I always managed to play. So, yeah, I probably, you know, looking back, I'm proud on that. And, you know, probably left a legacy. And, you know, you look over the last few days, another few Irish girls are announced to play. And I think it's 36 girls that will start the AFL league season over there in August, which is mad to think. In 2017, I was the first one to go out from here. And now there's 36 girls out there, which, you know, is brilliant. They're getting paid to play a sport.
Well, as a matter of interest, and it may be difficult to describe without the aid of visuals, you changed your gait. So what was maybe the big difference in how you ran?
I was told I was quite a stiff runner. Yeah, I actually we used to do 2K time trials over there. So when I went back running, I was fit to do a time trial. I actually nearly shaved about 45 seconds off my best time when I went back to do my first time trial after I broke my leg, which would have been in December. I'd broke my leg in May. And it's just because I had someone, you know, 6-7 days a week teach me how to walk, teach me how to run. So, yeah, basically the habits that you picked up when you were younger, I just didn't have a very good running style. And yeah, they kind of freed me up because I had no choice, because believe you, me learning how to walk again was tough enough. I had to spend hours and hours in the swimming pool. Walking in a swimming pool, learning how to put your heel down before your toe and things like that. Yes. So, yeah, it was just that, again, it's the professional element of sport. You have a full-time physio and a strength and conditioning coach that are practically living with you, trying to get you to back to your best.
So you're now a relaxed and loose runner, is that right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I probably just, yeah, became more, I wasn't as stiff as I was and became more relaxed and just had a better running gait and a better stride. My stride was longer and stuff like that. So, yeah, I just became probably a little bit quicker and yeah, just found running a little bit easier than I probably did, that I never knew was an issue.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I would have thought you were running just fine because you had speed all the way through a lot of your career. But I guess you do think of sprinters. They're often very upright and, you know, you see the slow motion and their jowls are almost vibrating because they're so relaxed in a sneaky sort of a way. Whereas, you know, you think of GA players and they have the ball and they're dodging tackles. They can be a bit hunched and stiff. I can see how you would fall into that habit.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the very exciting thing about the Irish players in Australia. And it's one thing I'd say the Aussies love the way that the Irish are so agile and can, you know, evade, you know, so many people and tackles and stuff. So, you know, it is a huge bonus in the AFL game as well.
We see on the TV, obviously, doing your punditry and that seems to be be going very well for you. And I also saw you went in as a coach with the Ballinasloe Stephenites men's team, county champions. So I dare say at some stage in the future, I can't ever imagine you not involved in football. Cora Staunton, Mayo manager, one way or another, is on the horizon. You would hope, I think.
I probably don't set myself the major goals. You know, I've gone in obviously with a men's team now, and I'm really enjoying it. It's different in ways, obviously, to working with females. And you know, I found obviously being in with a senior club team here in Mayo, it's hugely professional. Mm. You know, we've a lot of the Mayo boys involved with us as well. So yeah, I'm learning all the time. We've other coaches around us as well, and we've a very good manager. So yeah, we're about, I think, 5 or 6 weeks into it already now. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it. It's challenging, of course. I'm learning all the time off the other coaches. I'm learning off the managers. I'm learning off the players. But I think like Anthony, you have to do a few years of where you're doing an apprenticeship and learning the game, because yeah, I certainly don't say that I know everything about the game. But yeah, as I'm going along, I'm learning. You know, I'm learning more about the men's game, obviously, you know, from watching it and now being involved in coaching. But yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I'm really enjoying my time in with the lads. You know, as I said, it's challenging, but so far, you know, they've been a great bunch to work with. And, you know, people say, is there differences between the men's and the women's games? There's little differences, but majority of it is much the same.
Yeah. Very last one for me. Clock is right against me. You know, we started the chat where you were talking about how you liked, even as an 11-year-old, to have a sense of what the manager was doing on a GAA pitch and the overall tactical approach. Did you get to a point with your 6 seasons in Australia? You know, you first go over, and I'm sure it's, listen, you just need to worry about your job and figure out what you're doing and learn how to kick this new shape football. Don't worry what's going on elsewhere in the pitch. Did you get to a point after 6 seasons where you had a real good feel for the game and you started to even have thoughts on how it should be played and a tactical sense of it, or how difficult was it to get to that point?
Yeah, I think I'm not fully there, but certainly I have a greater understanding of the game. As I said, I was very lucky. I had a very good coach out there that sat with me for hours, and, you know, whether it was watching vision of games that I played in or watching vision of other games, or, you know, going out and watching the men's train over there for a couple hours. I 100% have, you know, people say, oh, it's a terrible game. It's very hard to watch.
Yeah.
But I think when you know the intricacies of it, yeah, I'd certainly, you know, there's always learnings in it, but I'd certainly understand it and have, you know, a lot of ideas on it now than I would when I first went over. And, you know, it's a game that I'm now hooked on. You know, the men's season starts on Thursday night over there, you know, so that's your kind of March now to September of games every weekend. So yeah, I'll try and, there's normally 9 games on at a weekend. So yeah, I'll try and watch a good 3 or 4 of them at the weekend, just because I love it. And then the women's season starts once the men's season. So between now and December, there'll be live AFL on telly, you know, probably 3 or 4 times the weekend. So yeah, it's something that I'm certainly interested in. And as I said, the Irish over there are having, in both the men's and the women's space are having a massive impact, and it's only going to increase. So yeah, it's certainly something I'll always keep in contact with, and certainly get out to see how it works in maybe in the off season when I'm finished with Ballinasloe.
Okay, very good. We are out of time, but thank you so much for coming on. Emma Byrne was picked yesterday on the soccer round Mount Rushmore, and you got the rubber stamping in GAA this morning. So we wanted to just have you on for a couple of minutes and say a big thanks, Cora, for all the efforts over the years. Thanks, Emil.
Thanks a million, Joe, and thanks to Tommy and Ashton and whoever else, you know, gave me the honour. It's obviously a huge honour, because I've played against some of the best, and to be in the same breath as Rena Buckley, Breed Corkery, Angela Walsh, Breed Stack, Sue Ramsbottom. Yeah, it's amazing. So okay. Thanks very much.
Well deserved. Thanks, Emil. Cora Staunton there with us on the line.